dyskinesias, where somebody, after a little while, these same drugs produce excessive, sometimes uncontrolled movements, as in this lady here. So this is very much the traditional view, and the view that is largely held by many of my colleagues. So, what about the prevalence of this condition? Well, we think about 130,000 people in the UK. This figure might be larger. 1 in 50 of us over the age of 80 will develop Parkinson's. Males are slightly more common. About 10% of our diagnosis are below the age of 40. And in fact, I run a young onset Parkinson's clinic where most patients are below the age of 50. So it's younger people are not exempt from this condition. The other issue we have to think is that the prevalence of this condition will rise sharply after we cross the ages of, well, after we hit 60. So you can see, as we live longer, how the prevalence and how much commoner this condition is likely to be in future. Well, if we take all of that into account, I think we would like to probably state, and this is the central message of my talk, is that the concept of Parkinson's, I think, is now changed. We think it's more than a motor disorder. We think dopamine is not the only neurochemical involved. And I'll show you that non-motor symptoms are present in 99% of people with Parkinson's, 99%. And these are the main determinant of quality of life in people with Parkinson's and their carer. We'd be interested to hear your views on that. And really, if we are to be modern in the way we treat Parkinson's, we have to be holistic. In other words, not just the motor, take care of the non-motor issues as well. So that is what underpins, I think, would underpin modern holistic care of Parkinson's. And this is echoed by Kurt Ellinger, who's a neuropathologist from Austria, who states, and I will just outline the main thing, Parkinson's should be endorsed or called a multi-organ disease, so it affects various systems, with variegated neurological and non-motor deficiencies. This should be ingrained in the definition of this condition, the condition that still continues to be defined by a criteria which just measures motor parameters. UK Brain Bank criteria has no non-motor features in its diagnostic criteria. The other point is that, as I said, and this would be, again, very interesting because I know that there's a big focus on stem cells here and the Cambridge group in particular. The focus, because we think of the dopamine hypothesis, everybody has driven that dopamine story. So we've developed forms of levodopa, various forms of dopamine agonists, various other dopamine modulating substances. In some ways, this also goes with stem cells, transplants, all working through or focused on the dopaminergic system. Yet, I think it's quite clear that if you look at Parkinson's, one size will not fit all. The same treatment that's effective for one person today or in the same clinic will not be same for the other person. And this is what also I'll touch upon, how phenotypes within Parkinson's are becoming more variable because we are recognizing them more. And why is this? Because we now know that all these four systems are involved right from the beginning: dopamine, noradrenaline, serotonin, acetylcholine. These pathways are present in various parts of the brain, there you see, which we know are involved in Parkinson's. Already, you heard that sensuous loss of smell is a very key factor in Parkinson's. Olfactory bulb is one of the key areas of neurodegeneration. The limbic area, responsible for memory, responsible for behavior, responsible for aspects of fatigue, for instance, a key area of neurodegeneration, as is the cortical area, again, responsible mainly for memory and heading towards issues such as dementia. And so immediately you can see that we're talking about a multi-peptide disorder here, not just dopamine. And that brings us to, so what are these non-motor symptoms? Well, there are a range of them. Once again, when we talk about non-motor symptoms, If you go to some centers, they will only talk about cognition and memory. Well, that's just part of the story. You have to take the patient as a whole. So while you have neuropsychiatric problems such as depression, anxiety, and you have cognitive problems such as dementia, there are also autonomic problems, dizziness when people stand, constipation. We have problems of gastrointestinal disorder, difficulty in swallowing, for instance. We have sleep disorders, a whole range, but the three commonest ones, insomnia, difficulty in falling asleep, excessive daytime sleepiness, dozing off while listening to my lecture, for instance. And number three would be REM behavior disorder, where people fight out bad, violent dreams and often end up either making, you know, fighting in the bed, punching their bed partners, and so on. Another problem we have hardly done any work on, Parkinson's patients have a syndrome indistinguishable from chronic fatigue syndrome. Not all, but some. These patients have severe and draining tiredness for which they can find no explanation, and for which many doctors would think that they have a psychological issue, yet when they have actually an organic chronic fatigue syndrome.